Coming up on this episode of The Social Hour, Obama's on Reddit, Romney's buying up trending topics, Facebook's targeting your phone number, and you can create an interactive timeline. All that and tips and tricks up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for The Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 75, recorded Friday, August 31st, 2012. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Ford. Ford invites us tech geeks to join the conversation, submit ideas, and grab a tech geek badge at social.ford.com. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of The Social Hour from Twit World Headquarters in Petaluma, California. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur, and I'm in Bancroft, Ontario, which is about 3 hours from Toronto. I'm in cottage country for the long weekend. And so once again, Sarah, you never know where you're going to find me. I'm not always in the basement at my house in my little studio. Sometimes I got to make things work on the road. Hence, here I am. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Now, cottage country is something that I'm not all that familiar with, but I assume that it's the sort of thing that folks in the Greater Toronto metro area do to get out of the city and get into the country while the weather's still nice and warm.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you know this, but the Greater Toronto Area, there are about 6 million people in the Greater Area. So it's a big city, lots of traffic, very urban. And so a lot of people try to escape. And there are different areas where people go to cottage country. The Muskokas is very popular. And people just try to get away to lakes all over the place and have fun. I didn't really grow up with this because I grew up on Prince Edward Island and it was more of a beach place. But I'm learning to adjust, bugs and all.
Yeah, it sounds fun. I feel like I grew up in the country, so the idea of having a cottage that's in the country is like, that's all I wanted to get away from. But now that I do live in the city, it's nice to have something like that. And within 3 hours is pretty reasonable.
Yeah, it's not too bad, especially in the summertime when you're traveling. I know when I lived out in San Francisco and we would go up to Lake Tahoe in the winter and, you know, you had to worry about weather and traffic. At least in the summer, it's a smooth drive as long as you get away before the traffic, which is exactly what we did.
And you bring your bug repellent.
Yes, bug repellent and lots of technical things for things like this.
So, right, so exactly.
I'm well prepared.
It's like, do I have my USB headset for the country cottage this weekend? Yes, check. All right.
Showed up in my in-laws' cottage, and I was like, oh, here's my son, and goodbye, everyone. I'm leaving. here I am. Nonetheless, we have so much news this week, Sarah. A lot happening in social media, as always, but this week seemed particularly heavy as far as some of the news, particularly around what's happening in politics right now, with lots of social media headlines making their way online. I'm sure you saw this. I know you did an AMA on Reddit not that long ago. President Barack Obama also did an AMA on Wednesday, and it crashed the servers over at Reddit. He was there for about half an hour talking openly with people online, answering questions. Looks like he was fairly open. I mean, he can only be so open in these conversations, and got asked lots of questions about things like what was the most difficult decision you had to make and what's the recipe for the White House beer, because that's something I think everybody wants to know.
Yeah. I like that you... you prefaced Obama's Reddit AMA with the fact that I also did an AMA, Amber. I appreciate that. Obviously, the president of the United States saw how successful mine was and was like, yeah, you know, that's a really good idea, Twit personality. But no, this was really cool. I had seen it a few days ago, and I was like, Obama's doing an AMA right now. That's weird. I mean, I read so much tech news, I hadn't heard about this. Let's go to Reddit and I want to participate and maybe he'll answer my question and that could be, you know, something I could brag about later. And it turns out that I wasn't the only one who didn't know about it. The White House kind of wanted to spring it on the internet to the point where behind the scenes at Reddit, even though obviously folks were in the know that this was going to happen, they might not have actually had the infrastructure set up adequately because the server was down. I couldn't even get it onto the page, even for, you know, read privileges. I was never able to ask a question. It was just the server load didn't allow me to do that during the time that I was trying. But even to read some of the questions, And there were like thousands of them in a very short period of time. Took forever. I think about it took about half an hour of me refreshing the page before it even loaded.
Yeah, you know, and I think since 2008, President Barack Obama's team has been so smart on the social media side of things. I think they really are able to go to those sites like Reddit and kind of capture that audience online that can make an impact and help to get President Obama into the headlines. Obviously, Wednesday was taking a little bit of the attention away from the Republican National Convention that was going on. And it's been interesting leading up to the 2012 election just to see how each side is battling out in the social media space.
Yeah, I agree. I also think the Reddit part of it is kind of fascinating. Not only is Reddit is not just for young people, right? But you can say there are a lot of actively participating young people who are part of the Reddit community, and it's a big, big community. Well, President Obama is, you know, as he goes up for re-election in a couple of months, he is, I mean, there are a lot of folks who are either, you know, voted for him and are going to vote for him again. Then there are the people who voted for him and for whatever reason, either they're not going to or they're not sure. And then there's the group of people who, for whatever, you know, over the last 4 years have become of legal voting age but weren't. And I think something like Reddit is just one example of just wanting to reach those young people. In a way that either the Romney campaign wouldn't touch or hadn't thought of. It's a way to seem like not only approachable, because this is obviously one of the most approachable things you can do, so you ask me anything, but kind of hip and in the know.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, I think you're exactly right. You know, I don't think that the Obama campaign has ever really been outdated as far as things that they do in the social media space. They seem to be always on the cutting edge, so clearly they have a very smart team around them, team of people who understand you know, what's hip and what's not in the digital world right now. For our, oh yes, and the President Obama, the not bad meme, the picture of him. I guess he alluded to this image of him, kind of a smirk on his face, which has become a meme during the AMA, as far as I understand.
Yeah, I think somebody asked him, like, so what do you think about this whole thing? And he said, not bad.
Not bad. I love it.
Yeah, short and concise. But the Romney campaign, obviously not out of social media at all. In fact, both sides, it's been pretty fascinating to see what each side chooses to use as their tools beyond just the regular, you know, buying ad slots in particular states that are, you know, that are swing states. The Romney campaign was the first to buy a trending topic on Twitter of the two. It was last night. It was Thursday, which is the last night of the Republican National Convention. For anybody who's not based in the U.S., hopefully you've heard. Yeah. Anyway, you've heard of it. And so after just a few hours, so just about 9 o'clock Eastern time, the hashtag RomneyRyan2012 had been seen nearly 10,000 unique tweets in those unique tweets. Those aren't even retweets. The retweets wasn't even counted in this. So it was definitely something that had been picked up as a hashtag, which of course is the whole reason to buy one. But yeah, the Romney campaign can claim we were the first to buy trending topics on Twitter, and it probably won't be the only time that we see something like that. In fact, I'm sure both sides leading up to the actual election will. Can you? I wonder if, what's the story on how many you can buy at one time?
I don't know, but I think it's really interesting in this article on Mashable that these trending topics, when you're buying them on a national basis, they start at $120,000. So it's not cheap to become a trending topic. And I don't know, Sarah, how do you feel about this? Because I sort of think, you know, buying a trending topic just seems a little less authentic than I like in the social media world. But perhaps, you know, it's fair game. I don't know.
Well, I think it's, I mean, it's advertising. I think if you think of it in terms of, well, you buy spots on TV or, you know, you want something to run in prime time or certain ads in magazines or on websites, it's all kind of the same thing. I mean, once you get into, I am paying for placement, I don't care how forward-thinking or new or cool the service is, you're buying an ad. So I kind of see it that way. And I'm actually more inclined, I know this is definitely not what Twitter wants to hear, but when I see that something is the official hashtag, I am less inclined to use it sometimes. And that has nothing to do with politics. It's almost just, I like the organic nature of hashtags.
Yeah. I could see that. I do agree with you in some ways. And I think at least Twitter does a good job of highlighting to show that it is a sponsored trending topic. So there's no confusion about whether it was authentic or bought, perhaps. So at least they're pretty clear about that.
Yeah, exactly. Someone in chat was mentioning, I wonder if they know about Eastwooding. And indeed, we do. If you have not heard about Eastwooding, this is either something that you find really, really funny or not at all, you know, or maybe you don't even know what we're talking about. So I'll try to explain. Clint Eastwood, longtime Republican. In fact, he used to be the mayor of Carmel, which is a small city in coastal central California. He was a speaker in the closing night of the Republican National Convention. Not exactly a surprise that he would have spoken, because he's extremely well-known Republican. He's obviously very high profile. People love his movies. You know, he's a well-known figure, and those are always good to have at conventions. But he had a sort of an unorthodox approach to getting his message across, which was, while he was standing at the podium delivering his speech, he was addressing President Barack Obama as if he was there. Like, why would you have done, this? And there was an empty chair next to him, more like a stool. And he, you know, kept looking over at the stool, asking the questions and actually responding as if Barack Obama was sitting in the chair, sending messages back to him. So although I think it's a very imaginative and creative way to conduct a speech, I think it was strange enough so that a lot of people ended up saying, well, Invisible Obama has got to be a new Twitter account.
So funny.
Because there's not really a man sitting in that chair. So Invisible Obama, which actually is a Twitter account, I'm not making that up, hit 20,000 followers in 40 minutes. Since the speech ran live on national television and, of course, hit the internet.
It's so funny. In this article, they also talk about at Clint's chair as being another account that was created, making a noble effort forward. Of course, Invisible Obama having way more users. And it looks like President Barack Obama responded to this idea of the invisible chair. And his team had posted a photo on Facebook responding to this with a picture of President Barack Obama's chair. The back of it says the president and a note that says this seat's taken in the image. So, this is just going to get more interesting as time goes on to watch the back and forth and how quickly things happen and how fast the teams responded in the digital world.
Yeah, I saw that too. And, you know, my first reaction when I see some of this stuff is, geez, you know, they're acting like children. But I think that, and, you know, there are a few people in chat who are saying, politics. You know, we always try to tread lightly, especially on this show, but on Twit in general, because people have a lot of different opinions about politics. And in general, I find so much of the political process, not just in the U.S., but particularly here because I live here and it affects me, so negative. It can be really, the whole thing, just kind of demoralizing. And it's easy to feel like any chatter about politics is just, it's a drag, and it's full of people who are saying the worst things about each other. And I think that that's kind of the fun of why these memes go so viral on social, because we are kind of looking for a way to engage in a way that doesn't make us all feel like garbage.
Yeah, and I think I don't think we could do a social media news show without mentioning things that were happening in the political space, particularly because social media has had such an impact all over the world for overtaking governments, for allowing people to make change in their countries. And so we do have to touch on it when it's happening. And this week has been a particularly busy busy time in social media, particularly with the RNC. So anyway, you're right. I mean, when some of this stuff turns into memes, I think that's when it gets particularly interesting and a little bit of fun too. So that's always a good thing.
Absolutely. So moving on to a little more about Twitter. This is a story that Gizmodo wrote up about Twitter targeting targeted ads. Their initial headline was about target history, and it got some people freaked out, like, wait a second, Twitter's going to use my tweeting history to target ads to me? It's not exactly that. Amber, what is going on here?
This is so funny. I think the way they changed the headline is genius. I love that they say Twitter is targeting targeted ads to become more targeted. And that's exactly what they're doing. And you're exactly right. I mean, what they're not actually browsing your browsing history on Twitter, but instead they're allowing advertisers to target people based on interests. But also, I think, Sarah, as far as I understand from this, to target people and use the at names. Like if you're in the music business and you want to target a bunch of bands, you're able to show up in those bands in their news feeds. Is this correct? I think this is how I'm understanding it.
Yeah, it's how I'm understanding it too. And you know, for example, if you're promoting a new film, I'm actually going to use one of their examples. If you're promoting a new film about dogs, you could select animation under movies and television, cartoons under hobbies and interests, and dogs under pets to precisely target as many people as possible. Now, of course, there's the whole debate. This has certainly been an active debate on Facebook, and it's only going to become more so of one on Twitter as they figure out more and more how to make money off of ads. But is targeted ads better or worse for all of us? We all, those of us who have Gmail accounts, know that for a long time, on the right-hand rail, Gmail is trying to target ads based on what we're talking about in our emails. Sometimes it's very uncannily on point, at least for me. And sometimes it's not at all, because there's just some like random name of a street that maybe I had typed out. And then they're thinking, like, I'm interested in, you know, deforestation. You know, it's just because it's like Forest Street or something. So it doesn't always work. But when it does, is it harmful because you're more inclined to buy something because they know too much about you? Or is it actually like, well, if we're going to all have to be subjected to ads anyway, shouldn't they at least be about stuff that we might possibly care about?
Yeah, I mean, I think to your point earlier on in the show, people are getting more used to the idea of having ads within their social streams. And the sense that I'm getting, especially as you watch more and more what's happening in social media with some of the big players, is that there's this feeling of desperation, Sarah. I don't know if you sense that in terms of trying to figure out how they're going to make money. I mean, they obviously have huge costs, lots of investment money, and no one's really perfected it as far as having an advertising platform and figuring out how to take advantage of huge communities in a way that the audience isn't really turned off. So I don't think this is a big surprise. It kind of makes sense. Twitter has to figure things out as far as what they're going to do. Again, I just go back to the idea, I hope it's as transparent as possible to the end user, because I think that's what people expect, especially in this day and age.
Yes, I agree. Twitter has really gotten quite a bit of flack over the last few weeks because of changes that they've made to their API. We talked a little bit about that last week. And they are, it's blazing new trails, period, for Twitter right now. You know, they're in a big new office. That office happens to be not that far from where I actually live. So when I walk by, you can really, the presence of Twitter is physically very different than it used to be. They're in this big, huge building in this somewhat blighted area of San Francisco, and everyone's talking about, you know, Twitter's going to turn this whole neighborhood right around. It's like, at the same time, they're making these decisions that are really upsetting people that have been using the service for many years, but that's because they're a for-profit business and they're growing, and it's all very interesting. And I don't even want to say that they're doing the wrong thing, because again, this is a service that didn't exist, what, 5 short years ago, 6. So the targeted ad strategy is something that they're, you know, trying to figure out without taking off as many people as possible. Mm-hmm.
I almost feel less sensitive about how Twitter is doing their advertising, because unlike Facebook, where people are sharing so much personal information, I mean, people only share really a little bit of information on Twitter. A lot of people don't even use their real names, or they just use their first names, and maybe some other information attached their names to pick their profile. But I think it's not as sensitive of an area as perhaps Facebook is.
Yes. I don't think anything makes people more sensitive and offended than Facebook when they change anything that has to do with either ads or privacy or security. In fact, we're going to get to one of those stories that might boil your blood a little bit in a second. But let's first talk about the fact that Amazon researchers say that although Pinterest definitely sends a lot of people to Amazon products when you feature something through Pinterest, it doesn't generate a lot of sales. Will Young, who's the director at Zappos Labs, told Bloomberg that Pinterest users are far more likely to share a purchase than Twitter or Facebook users, because it's a little bit more, it makes a little bit more sense within the confines of Pinterest, but that shared items generate far less revenue than Twitter or Facebook, which is an issue for Pinterest because the whole idea of the site is that it's going to help monetize social activity based on visual links to products and services that people love, rather than, again, something like Twitter or Facebook that can be a little bit about that, but certainly is not so narrowly focused on goods and services and buying and selling. What do you think is going on, Amber? Do you think it's, I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, I think this is great news for Twitter, not great news for Facebook, and really bad news for Pinterest, as the article on Business Insider outlines. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, in my mind, I almost think people collect things so much on Pinterest. They're not necessarily taking as much action, perhaps, and that could be part of it. It doesn't seem like an overly active community as far as purchasing, based on what I'm reading here. Also, I think this is kind of interesting. The little note at the bottom of this article, Sarah, I'm sure you saw this, where Amazon owns Zappos and Amazon.com is a rival of Rakuten, a Japanese e-commerce giant that is also an investor in Pinterest. I don't know if that sort of...
is an incentive for Amazon to downplay? Yeah,
exactly. You know, because obviously they would prefer people used their service. I don't know. But nonetheless, I thought that was an interesting little note. So, you know what? I don't know. I don't think that Pinterest is going to... people are going to stop using it necessarily. It's really one of those networks that I haven't seen before. Sarah, I don't know if you find yourself in situations where you may mention Twitter and Facebook to people, but all of a sudden you mention Pinterest in a room, and I'm going to have to say this, but particularly a room full of women, and they just love it. So even if they haven't figured out how to monetize right now in a way that works for the service, I think there's a lot of diehard users, and I'm sure eventually they'll figure it out.
Yeah, I think if they... It's probably more of an approach issue than Pinterest doing anything wrong, because clearly they've captured a lot of attention of many, many users. Like you said, not all women, but predominantly it's something that a lot of women who aren't necessarily extremely social in a technical way and on other websites or services or apps are using. But I also think that, you know, I don't think about Pinterest to buy stuff. I think about Pinterest could be a way for me to click through to an original link and go ahead and buy something if I want to. But it's not really a place where I say, you know, I need a new living room rug. And I want to look at some choices, something affordable that's big enough for my space. And I'm probably not going to go to Pinterest to do that. I would probably start at something that's already an e-commerce experience, like... Mm-hmm. I don't know, IKEA, for example, because that seems like I'm just cutting out the middleman a little bit more. But then again, I guess if I knew of a Pinterest page that was really great as far as home decor and furnishings, that might change things. But again, it's still just affiliate revenue at that point.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think Pinterest is great for inspiration, right? It inspires people with new ideas, creative ideas, and maybe that's the end of the cycle. I'm sure they're going to, like any other social network out there, try to figure out a way to change that and change users' behavior a little bit. But I still think, you know, it could be a while. Hopefully the community there sticks with them until they do figure that out. Now, Sarah, we talked a lot about ads, and we're still not done because, like we mentioned, there's so many companies trying to figure out how to make it work. Facebook, again, is busy getting into our personal information, it appears.
Yes, this is the thing I said might boil your blood. Facebook is going to roll out email and phone number-based ad targeting, and they're going to do it next week. A blog called Inside Facebook apparently reported the feature after it went live temporarily. At that point, someone from Facebook basically had to confirm, okay, yes, this is going to be something that we're going to be rolling out next week. And she explained to TechCrunch how it worked. So, all right, this, before you freak out and say, oh my God, you know, it's like my number's in some horrible database. It starts off with a customer list that a business already has created. So if there's a pet store down the street in Petaluma, I've, you know, entered my phone number, you know, for their newsletter, that sort of thing, or email address. That business has my information, what I've decided to share with them. So that business could then upload their list, their contact list of email addresses and phone numbers, user IDs, whatever, you know, whatever information they have on customers to Facebook. The data will be hashed first, so there shouldn't be you know, an issue with Facebook even having access to the information, nor anyone else. Then Facebook's user data will be similarly hashed, and the company can compare both sets of hashed data and create a list of users whose contact information that they already had matches up with what the advertiser uploaded. So at that point, the pet store has a list of folks that they can say, oh, well, I mean, you've already demonstrated an interest in our product. It would be good if we could target to you, because that's just one more place that you're likely to be receptive to what we're selling.
Sarah, that was a really good job of explaining something that is kind of complicated.
Well, thank you. I mean, there was an original article that explained it to me, and that's why I understand it, since it's not actually a live feature yet. And some people probably wouldn't call it a feature. They'd say, ah, this is just, you know, one more reason not to have your phone number on Facebook. I've never had my phone number on Facebook because I don't want anyone to call me ever. It's not so much that I think it's a privacy problem. And it seems like at least the way that this has been explained to us, it's really not going to screw with you any more than it's going to target ads to you based on who else might already have your information on Facebook. So again, it's that conundrum. You know, is it better to have Facebook ads about stuff that you've admitted that you're already interested in, or stores that you've already been in? That you might want to know, you know, features and what's new, that sort of thing about the stores, or is it just going to make you feel creepier that within the Facebook experience, so much is known about you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised like you that people even put their phone numbers on Facebook. I don't see this a lot, except with a younger generation. I see it a lot with family members of mine who are teenagers. They tend to put their numbers up there, and that's just part of the way that they communicate. But I've never been a huge fan of that, and I have never done that either. It doesn't seem too risky as far as Facebook really invading your privacy. I just think from a marketing standpoint, as far as selling this to potential advertisers, I do think it's a little clumsy and kind of confusing to wrap your head around at first. But again, I see Facebook scrambling for ways to figure out how to make money, and nothing seems really that clean and simple anymore, which probably leads us nicely into the next article that you dug up online. Poof, $1 billion slash from 2012 Facebook revenue forecast.
Yeah, that was just a little article that I found online earlier this week. And this is really pretty much just analysts saying, we now expect Facebook to generate less revenue in this calendar year, or in their fiscal calendar, than we did earlier in the year. And that's the response to Facebook stock, Facebook losing some of its stock value since its IPO. The fact that Facebook is obviously actively working on ways to better target people so that their ads are not only received better, but are actually clicked on, you know, taken action on. And I still think that it's in the early days for Facebook. We've talked about it quite a bit on here on the Social Hour. We've definitely talked about it on Tech News Today as well. It's like, how long does Facebook have to play around with this stuff when there's so much money at stake and there are so many shareholders who now depend on them figuring all of this out, and with certain markets getting, you know, to a saturation point. I know the U.S. market is slowing as far as new user adoption, but other markets are doing really well. So Yeah, it's it sounds like analysts are like, okay, we were a little bit bullish on what we expected Facebook to do this year, but I also really don't feel like they're going to figure it all out in, you know, 365 days. I think this is more of like a 5-year plan, quite honestly. Maybe even a 3-year plan. I know Facebook is in the process of building out a huge new headquarters for themselves in Menlo Park, California, which is right next to where they already are. But a really big, state-of-the-art, crazy new headquarters from scratch. So it's not as if they're not on the up and up, right? I mean, everything that Facebook is doing points to the fact that they also are thinking long-term. But again, analysts are pulling back a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's, like you said, especially when there's so much growth in other markets. But I do worry a little bit 5 years down the road in terms of where Facebook will be, particularly in the U.S., as far as users, because I think people are so fickle about social networks that they join. And I don't think that people tend to stick with these social networks for years and years and years. So I think from that perspective, they could struggle a little bit with the U.S. market. But you're right, overseas and other places, they seem to be doing pretty well. I feel like we might confuse people who are listening and like, should they leave Facebook? Should they advertise on Facebook? Should they market on Facebook? And I think at the end of the day, Sarah, I don't know if you agree with this, but people still should be on Facebook if they want to reach certain audiences. And obviously for individuals who have family and friends there, it's still a great place. It's just that there's so much competition these days. And I think Facebook sometimes messes with people's personal information. So that is something I think people need to pay attention to.
All right, a quick reminder that we do record the Social Hour live on Fridays, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. Thanks to everybody who joins us live. Always good to have you, especially everybody in chat. Or if you're lurking, we're happy to have you too, talking back to us on Twitter, etc. But if you're not watching us live, that is cool. You can always keep up with us on our website, twit.tv/TSH. That is our mothership. That's where not only can you get subscription feeds, so you can watch video feeds of our show depending on how you watch it. We've got a variety of feeds that are best for if you're watching on the go on mobile, or do you want to watch via iTunes, or go ahead and add to your RSS reader of choice, and so on and so forth. We have audio feeds too, so if you say, hey, I'd love to watch you guys, but I really can't do that, but I would love to listen, we make that as easy as possible as well. And if you miss an episode, our episode archive is right there, too. So last week, for example, you just click on or the Social Hour 74. That's correct. We've got our video up at the top. For some reason, it's not loading right now. I don't know. Our website's being a little bit squirrely today. But not only are the videos there to help you keep up with us easily, but all the links to everything that we talk about are also on that page. Thanks, Jason. Jason's furiously trying to find something that's actually loading correctly. Good work. Thanks to everybody who watches each week. Remember, if you've got any questions, comments, concerns, ideas, tips, tricks, you can email us at thesocialhour@twit.tv. All right, Amber, before we get into some of our tips and our spotlights of the week, let's thank Ford for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. Recently, Leo and Ayaz, actually, you know them, my colleagues here at Twit, spoke with one of Ford's lead technologists, Jim Bukowski, about views on the future of technology in vehicles. And I mean, this is a person who works at Ford full time to try to make technology integrated into their automobiles that is not only really awe-inspiring, but actually works. Some of the topics range from categories of apps that are coming to the Ford Sync platform, location-based services. That's very, very important, especially when you're driving around. Finding friends, financial service apps, lane departure warning, lane centering features using onboard cameras. Those are great. I mean, if you're starting to drift into another lane, don't you want your car to give you a little heads up? Hey, get back in there. Using the cloud to seamlessly connect information and services that you use in your home, your vehicle, your office. And Ford Social is one of the ways to develop and surface ideas to the engineering team. And they're really listening. It's actually a place where all of us, you and me, can go to post ideas to Ford. And Ford will take these ideas. And if they're amazing, then they want to use them as you know, part of the Ford hive mind to actually make technology not only that's cool and works, but that people want. That's really sort of the whole point of the social experiment here, is that Ford knows that, hey, we're the ones who are buying the vehicles. We're the ones who want technology that makes sense to us. You can go to social.ford.com and get a sense of all of the ideas that are being shared. Some of them are so cool. I really hope that they turn out to be a reality. Opportunistic air conditioning, for example. Hey, all right, let's do it. And what's cool, too, is that it's not just about reading other people's ideas. You can, of course, submit some of your own. But hey, maybe this opportunistic air conditioning, you read the little blurb that Eric S. wrote, and you're like, you know what? I don't think that's going to work. And you can vote it up or down. So you can still participate, even if you can't think of anything great right this second. Also, you can get badges. Leo's always saying, what is it with the kids and the badges these days? And I'm like, it's not just for kids. I mean, people like badges because it's sort of a reward for spending time and energy on a particular topic. And these are badges that, you know, are for Ford folks. If you've got a Ford or you're looking to get a Ford or you're part of the community, this is just it's a fun incentive to be at social.ford.com. So head on over there, learn a little bit more about everything that Ford is doing and some of the great ideas the community is coming up with. And we thank them so much for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. That's social.ford.com. All right, Amber, how about this social tip, which is something that has bothered me for eons. When I click a mail-to link somewhere on a website somewhere, I want to get a hold of the developer, then Apple Mail opens up on my Mac, and I'm like, no, what I wanted to do was just copy the address because I want to use Gmail.
I could not agree more. This happens to me all the time. It gets so frustrating when you are clicking on those links and it opens up your mail program that you're not using. However, if you are using Gmail, the good news is that you can get this extension that allows you to automatically, when you're clicking on any type of link, when you're surfing the web, it allows you to send via your Gmail account. So it won't open up a mail client like Apple Mail, for example. And even better, it has a nice little box that it brings up where you can write the message right there on the fly. So really, really simple extension that works great. And I think really helpful for a lot of people like you, Sarah, who get frustrated. So if you're using Chrome and you want to download this extension, it's completely free. It's called Send from Gmail by Google.
Web 5237 says, I use Gmail in Apple Mail, so the links work fine for me. Yeah, it depends on how you've got your email set up. But some people actually want that Gmail window, you know, the compose mail window to open up. Actually, I have this extension enabled, Amber, and that is something that I want as my default. It's just a personal preference. But yeah, this is a really good thing to have, certainly, and it's found in the Chrome store.
Yeah, really, really simple. And it's free. We love free, don't we, Sarah?
Yes, we absolutely do. Thank goodness. I would hate to have Gmail be free, but the option to have my Gmail mail be my default mail not be free, that would just be a kick in the pants.
It would be a little frustrating.
Yeah, it would be.
All right, Sarah. So next up is our Spotlight of the Week. Always finding fun stuff for this. And just this week, I interviewed a woman. She's a co-founder of a service called Shop Locket. And what they do, it's like a pop-up e-commerce site that allows you to start up your own shopping site in conjunction with some of your social media services. So she showed me her website. And I noticed on her site, when you went to this link called Timeline, that they had this really great timeline of their company, how their company started, great milestones along the way. Not timeline like on Facebook, but instead you use an arrow button to kind of browse horizontally, and found out eventually on Twitter that there are a couple of services that do this. One is Timeline, it's timeline.verite.co, an amazing tool that allows you to insert a timeline like this within your web page. So I think for anyone in the social media space who wants to pull in those moments and tell their story, whether you're an individual or you're a company, this is a really slick way to be able to do it and adds more interactivity than what you would normally have on an About Us page.
I love this. This is really neat. I've seen timeline services like this before. Memo Lane comes to mind. That's a little bit of a This is what I said or did or checked into at a moment in time. But I love this, not just for companies, but it can be for really anything. I love the idea that you can add so many different services into the timeline. In fact, before the show, I had clicked through a Whitney Houston timeline that's that was one of the examples at Verite. And it's just set up in such a way that it makes perfect sense. I like the left to right scroll as you're moving through time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you said, it's not anything like the Facebook timeline, which works well. I guess it in essence is the same idea, but it looks and works completely differently. This is a really neat service, and I can see it being used in so many different ways.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing because when I was reading through ShopLocket's timeline, it really gave me a sense of the company from the beginning of the foundation of the company as far as who started it, points along the way where they got lots of press. And when I went to check it after this woman came to do an interview with me on a show that I do, she had a picture of us, you know, talking about the time she came to be on the show. That was all part of the timeline. And so I think just a unique and kind of innovative way to be able to tell your story. So that's Timeline.js. And that's from Verite. Of course, we'll have a link on the Social Hour website on Twit if people aren't able to dig it up immediately. But a really, really cool little service.
Yeah, I love it. This is great. They also have on their main page, I mentioned the Whitney Houston timeline, but they have a bunch of different timelines that have been used by individuals and companies. There's a podcast that I really like that NPR runs called Radiolab. Radiolab had its own timeline, so I was like, oh, cool, this is really neat. And it's because of everything that you can pull in, all of that content is unique. You're never going to have a timeline that looks like anybody else's anyway, so there's not sort of that uniform, oh, yeah, everybody's doing this kind of thing. It can really be customized, which is, I think, part of why the design is so compelling.
Yeah, it works really well.
All right, let's move on to some viewer feedback. We got a voicemail from someone who did not leave her name, but she has a bit of a question about the past.
Hey, Sarah. Hey, Amber. Love the show. I was wondering what you guys think of the whole retro theme going on right now, such as iPhone cases that are like cassette tapes or the really old Game Boys. What's up with that? Is it going to last or not? Love the show. See ya.
See ya, unnamed person. Amber, do you want to start? I have a theory about why we like retro stuff so much.
Sure. Yeah. First of all, thank you so much for sending us a voicemail. We love getting voicemails to the show. It's always lots of fun. I think that it will last. I mean, I think everybody likes to hold on to a little piece of the past. You know, if you were born during that time where you remember cassette tapes, it's always fun. I see a lot of people with those iPhone holders that are cassette tapes, and I don't think that's going to change. I think that, again, people just like having a little piece of history with them as we progress so quickly through the technological ages.
Yeah, some folks in the chat room, Brian Blaze says, classics never die. Canadian Geek mm-hmm. says, it reminds us of our youth. That's why I like stuff like that. It's absolutely, I think there's also a little bit of a folks that were particularly into audio video and computers and their Ataris and stuff that maybe not all kids were so interested in. More so feel this nostalgic kind of connection to the old clunky cassettes and whatever that we all used to use. I mean, that's kind of how I feel. I remember being the kid who was really interested in, you know, recording voices and microphones, and that was like all I really wanted to do. I don't think that typical of a little girl. So not all my friends are really interested in having something that looks like, you know, a retro old. I'm using just cassette tapes as an example. But that's why I kind of like that, because it's like, hey, look, you know, I've liked this for a really, really long time, and look how far we've come. But I know what that is.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. It's always fun to have, you know, just to remember, you know, how far we've come with all of these things. Like if you remember the 8-track, Sarah, I don't know if you do.
Well, you know, I never had. We never had one, and it's a little before my time. I mean, 8-tracks were, I was certainly alive when people were using them, but by the time I think I was aware of all of that stuff, our family never had one, so something I kind of learned about later on.
Hmm. Yeah, it's like I remember my first little ghetto blaster, as they were called. You know, that was such a big deal, having a ghetto blaster with like a, you could actually record your CDs onto tapes. Anyway, I'm not going to talk anymore about this because it's going to date us, Sarah. Yeah. So we can move on.
Hey, hey, at least you're talking about CDs. I mean, that was like eighth grade for me.
I tried to talk about the 8-track, but it wasn't going anywhere else, so I've decided to step back from there, pretending that I don't know what that is.
Right.
nonetheless, looks like we got an email from Mike, who emailed us a link to a privacy tool for Facebook, McAfee Social Protection Service, also a browser plugin that's available only for Windows 7 machines running Internet Explorer 8 or higher, or Firefox 8 and higher. I have not heard of this social protection service. Looks like it's also an app that you can get on Facebook. Do you know anything about it, Sarah?
Yeah, so this is, as you mentioned, it's pretty restricted. I mean, it's not even something that I can run on Facebook. I tried because I'm not using a Windows 7 machine, but this is obviously a slow rollout. The idea is this. Okay, so I upload a bunch of Facebook pictures to Facebook, you know, of my recent vacation or something. Now, you and I are friends, so of course you can see those photos. I've designated everyone who's my friend on Facebook can see this collection of photos from my trip. But you can download that photo. That's an option that you have. In your settings, when you look at the viewer, you've got a little options area down at the bottom and you can download that picture. Now, of course, the idea is that since we're already friends, that shouldn't bother me. Maybe it's a picture that you're also in, or you were there, or you took the picture, or, you know, that sort of thing. But some people don't feel comfortable with that because they want to, have greater control over the experience. So social protection would, I'm trying to explain this in the right way. It would allow you to upload a Facebook photo, but it would be blurred unless someone else is also running the extension. And even if they're your friends, and even if you trust them completely, it would never be downloadable by anybody else. So this is it would be a photo that's up there. And it can be seen, but there's an extra layer of protection. And now, Social Protection Service, which is actually, I mean, the page on Facebook is live. They claim, let me get the page up so I make sure I'm reading their claims. They say, okay, McAfee Social Protection safeguards your Facebook photos by letting you control exactly who can view them. When you upload your photos using the app, your photos will appear blurry and indistinguishable to people you don't know. What's more, no one, not even your friends and family, can save, print, download, or screen capture them. Now, this is awesome for anybody who is just really, really paranoid about that stuff. I'm not exactly sure how they could keep you from screen capturing your page within, you know, the operating system of your computer. Because that's not anything that McAfee would be disallowing anyone if they don't have it running. I'm not sure how that would work. I don't know if that's possible. But I can see that if you are just really, I don't know, maybe you've been burned in the past, or if this just makes you feel better about uploading pictures to Facebook, it could be helpful. Yeah, so the idea behind this, Amber, is I guess if you're extremely paranoid about people downloading your photos, this would be a good service. But if you've got it downloaded or installed, rather, and I don't, I'm probably just not going to look at your pictures because they're all blurry.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's true. But I guess if it works for some people, it doesn't harm anyone else too much. But thank you so much for sending that to us. Obviously, I'm sure there's someone who can get some value out of that. And Sarah, we, of course, want to hear from all of our listeners and our viewers, particularly emails, voicemails, videos are great. People can write the social hour at twit.tv or leave us a voicemail at 2626-SOCIAL. And maybe we should mention, what's the service we were using for people to record quick little videos?
That is, let me look. It is, I'm looking.
I put you on the spot. I'm sorry.
It's okay. We talked about it last week.
I know.
And, VSnap. VSnap.com.
VSnap.
Yes.
Okay, perfect.
Yes, VSnap is one of many ways that you could send us a video, but it's got a nice little UI, clean and concise. If you have ideas or whatever, we are waiting.
Waiting. Send us your videos. Okay, Sarah, speaking of feedback, Luke Addis, who I know watches the show a lot, he sent us a link last week to something that I thought would be great for Rad or Fad. This is, I don't know if I'm going to butcher the name. I call it Moleskin or Moleskine. What do you say, Sarah?
I say Moleskin also.
Moleskin, okay.
But we were actually, believe it or not, we were just talking about this on iPad Today yesterday. And Leo and I decided that it's just whatever way you want to pronounce it is fine.
Okay, because I've seen it a bunch of different ways. And I even went online to see how other people were saying it. And it seems to be that there are varying opinions on this. So the Moleskin or Moleskin Evernote Smart Notebook. This is a very cool idea that Luke had sent for this week's Rad or Fad. And the idea is that it uses Evernote's page camera feature to capture the pages of your notebook. So with your smartphone or tablet using the Evernote app. So the actual Moleskin Notebook has lined pages that could be ruled or squared pages with a bunch of different dots. So that means you can get a really clean image when you're using the Evernote app, and you can capture anything that you've taken on the page, and then it can be stored and easily accessed within the Evernote app. So I think this is awesome, because really it's bringing that actual physical world into the digital world, and great for a productivity tool because people still like to write things on paper. And the fact that you can store it easily within Evernote is just an advantage. So I think definitely rad.
I think rad too. It's funny. We actually talked about this on iPad Today yesterday too, because we were talking about some updates that Evernote had made to its iPad app. And this was one of them, is ability to quickly take photos from the Moleskin notebook. And we were trying to figure out, okay, well, what would be the best use of this? And I came up with, well, how about students? Because sometimes you're taking notes, you're sketching, you're brainstorming ideas, and a lot of people want to use a pen and a paper. And obviously, anyone who's had a Moleskin notebook knows that they're very well made. They're very beloved by people who swear by them as really just the best little notebook to carry around with you. So that might be something that you've always got. But to be able to then have it within your Evernote experience, of course, Evernote, if you don't already have an account, is a really good way to, it's almost like a multimedia scrapbook from so many different sources, whether it's, you know, photos or links or pictures or articles, and list goes on. Great way to just kind of organize everything that you see and interact with on a daily basis, online and off. But yeah, I love this idea. I think it's great. My only gripe is that the notebook is $25. So you figure, well, if you use it, when you use it up, then that's it, right? Because it's just a piece, you know, they're pieces of paper. It's not like you can wipe them clean. So it might add up if you're using quite a few notebooks in a short period of time.
Yeah, it'd be cool if you could actually replace the paper. You know, if it was like a little, some way that you could add new paper and just buy the paper would be a great idea. But it is great that you can write handwritten notes, and then Evernote will capture that, and you're able to access those notes if you're using tag words or keywords or anything like that. So I think a pretty rad idea. And thanks so much, Luke, for sending that to us. And if anyone else has an idea for rad or fad, let us know, because this is always a fun segment at the end of the show, if I can stay online.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, speaking of staying online, Amber, you're about to enjoy cottage country. Canada has Labor Day on Monday as well, right?
We sure do. Yeah. So Monday is a holiday.
You've got a nice long weekend. We're about to have a nice long weekend as well. So we'll go ahead and wrap up this episode of The Social Hour. We will be back next Friday as usual. We're actually going to be shooting, for all of our live viewers, two back-to-back shows. So one show at its regular time, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, and then another show directly after that, starting at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. We're gonna bank a show for the following week. So we've got one in the can. In the meantime, if you want to keep up with us, make sure that you've got certain links to stuff that we talked about correctly, all that good stuff, just go to twitch.tv/TSH. You can find us in iTunes. And a variety of podcatchers have added us to their tech lists and social lists and things like that. So shouldn't be too hard to find us around the web. And thanks to everybody who listens and watches each week. And if you're new, welcome. We're glad to have you. Until next time, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur, and we will see you all soon.